Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Just Films and That. This is the podcast that celebrates films we reckon might be underrated or underseen. But every now and then, we like to take a look at what one of us think is a classic film and try to determine why it's a classic and if it's deserving of that status. And this week, we're going to be taking a look at A Dozen Furious Fellas from 1957. It's 12 Angry Men, Josh. It's 12 Angry Men. I was doing dad jokes.
Good did stuff, that land? That.
Yeah,
12 lads and they're 12, livid.
12 fuming they fellas,
proper,
a dozen fuming fellas.
Proper
yeah.
Fuming, these lads.
It's kind of, I kind of thought it was just like one really fuming fella and then 11 sort of like, meh.
Changeable chaps.
Yes.
One fuming fella and 11 changeable chaps.
Much better. We fixed it. There you go.
One ticket for one fuming fella and 11 changeable chaps, please.
I'm there. I'm there and I'll come back tomorrow. So listeners, we are looking at 12 Angry Men from 1957. So spoiler warnings if you haven't seen that yet. So Josh, you pick this one. So do tell us, what is the film about and why did you pick it?
Yeah, so 12 Angry Men is a film from 1957. It's based on a play. Essentially, it's all set in one room where a jury are deliberating on the fate of a defendant, whether or not he is guilty or not guilty. His guilty verdict will result in the death penalty. And essentially, it's a sort of morality play exploring things like that in terms of perspective and guilt and, you know, the justice system and all the things that come with it. Why did I pick this? Well, as you said in the intro, we do a classic film every now and then where we pick a film that, you know, is considered to be a classic for whatever reason, and we decide whether or not it's a classic. So we haven't done one of those for a while. It's also been a while. So one of the reasons I picked this one was the sort of three main ones. One, it's been a while since we've done a film of this kind of age, sort of 70, no, 60 almost years old. And it's very, very well rated on IMDb. I think it's the highest rated film in the, it's in the top 250 of IMDb. And I think it's like, might even be in the top 10, something like that. I was intrigued to watch it because of that, to see if the ratings sort of, you know, if it did the ratings justice and stuff like that. I've also seen it parodied and referenced a lot. So I thought it'd be interesting to explore that legacy. I think, you know, if you look at, I don't know for sure, I was trying to read about it, but, you know, a lot of stuff about everything set in one room. So if you think about TV shows where they do what's called a bottle episode, there's usually a reason why the characters can't leave that one place, or it's all set in one place, or it's set in real time, or whatever. So I don't know if this is the originator of that, but I think it's certainly gone a long way to giving that idea legs. So that's why I picked it. Had you seen this before?
I had not seen it, and I've definitely like heard the title or whatever, but it didn't mean anything to me. Like, I didn't know anything about it. And I think this, and I think Rashomon as well, which was another one you picked, I went in just completely blind, really, with no idea about anything around it. So how was this on your radar then?
I think just from seeing things like best lists, you know, AFI, BFI lists of classic films, best films of all time. I mean, this is genuinely considered to be a little bit like when we've done things like The Great Dictator or Rashomon, either one of the best films of all time or one of the most influential films of all time. Oh, that's sort of what leads me to pick classics, really. There's two things. Either it's not that well known, but its legacy is clear to see, or it is really, really well known and I haven't seen it. So I pick Saturday Night Fever, for example, and that was one I hadn't seen. And I like to skip between the two. So there are other more recent, more sort of pop culture-y or populist films that are on my list to pick as a classic. I haven't got to yet, or there's things like this, or The Great Dictator, or Rashomon, where I thought, I want to see these films that you sort of, you can see their fingerprints all over stuff, but you never think I'm going to go watch it. Another one, Citizen Kane, which I have seen, so I haven't put it on my podcast list, but who knows, that might get picked in the future. So that's that's how it's sort of come across my radar, is just general film knowledge and probably referencing and parody, really.
Okay, then. So the big question, in general, how did you feel coming away from it?
Do you know what? I thought it was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I really, really enjoyed it. It's obviously, it's all acting. And this sounds like a silly thing to say about a film, but it's all script. It's all acting. There's no action. It's all debate and stuff like that. But I found it to be a real interesting and quite gripping sort of thematic exploration of various things. And I think it's really, really well executed, from the script to the acting to the direction, stuff like that. So that was my general start for 10. So I'll get into what I liked about it in a minute. What about you? Like, what was your sort of initial thoughts?
I mean, completely the same as you, like almost word for word, everything you said there. I was pretty much hooked from the off. Like,
it's just talking, isn't it?
It's just chat. Just it's 12 dudes chatting in a locked room. And there really is something about that. And you see it sometimes in more modern settings. And like, even when you think about something like Oppenheimer, where some of the more, like, there's a lot of scenes in that where it is just guys in like a university room just kind of talking about physics or whatever. And it's like, well, how do you make that interesting? And with this, that is the whole film. They're in this room. It's 12 men talking. And I couldn't look away. And like you said, a lot of the themes that are explored in this, I thought were excellent. And really, so like, I've never done jury duty.
No, me neither.
It made me think about things that I had just never considered before. And like, how would I respond in that situation? How would I pick apart this information that is put in front of me? And I found like, it really got me asking those questions. So I was like, oh, well, that's really interesting. And like you say, obviously the standout things are like the script and the performance and just how to utilize the space in a way that is so effective where everything is so, like, for lack of a better word, just really plain and basic. So how do you make that engaging? How do you hold someone's attention for an hour and a half? When you think about some of the other films that were sort of coming out around this time or had come out even before this, and this is just like, I thought it was really, really good.
It's really good, isn't it? Does a real interesting thing with exposition, doesn't it? Which is, it goes from you knowing nothing, not even their names. You just get hints here and there of where they grew up, if they've got children, if they're married.
Yeah, the sort of jobs they do. Yeah.
But, you know, apart from at the end where two characters introduce themselves by their surname, as I'm Davis and McCarty?
And McCardle
or McCarty or something like that, isn't it? But even then, it's not I'm John or I'm Peter or whatever. So,
yeah, and it's not even really like, let's stay in touch. It's literally just he wanted to acknowledge him.
Yeah.
It was like, I need to acknowledge you for what you did in there. Here's a handshake, and now off you go on your separate ways.
And I really enjoyed that. And it was also, you know, it was a masterpiece in many ways, but in showing, not telling. So one of the characters is clearly, so the defendant in it, I think he's Puerto Rican, but it doesn't, or you know, he's not white. That's all you really know. I suppose what he is as a not white person is irrelevant. But one of the characters is clearly a racist.
Yeah.
And is profiling him based on the fact that he isn't a white man.
Really, it feels like he's really racist even for 1957. Because like, the other characters around him are like, is there something wrong with you?
Yeah, like, and he's not so even bad. It's not even his age, because there's a guy there who is older than him who's very much like, you're a disgrace. Like that sort of thing. And that, you know, films today would, I think, would postmark it too much or hit you over the head with it too much with it. And I don't mean that in terms of the importance of the message. The importance of the message has not changed, but the way it's delivered. So that idea of wanting to sort of pat yourself on the back and be like, look, we're acknowledging this issue. Whereas back then, they just slowly drip it through. And then in the end, he has this sort of rant and then you get the impression that he is expecting other people to agree with him. And literally most of the cast just stand up and turn their back to him.
Yeah, I love
that. And it's very theatrical because obviously it is based on a play. And it's, you know, many things that are based on plays. Obviously, you know, Shakespeare, modern things, Arthur Miller, all that sort of stuff. But you can, you know, of all the things that are adapted from a play, this must be sort of simultaneously really easy but really difficult at the same time. So I thought that was interesting, that idea of it's very static. It's one room. It is in New York, but it doesn't really matter that it's in New York. It's just in a room in a city. And that's it. That's all it is. So it's really difficult because it's like, how do you keep people engaged? In the theatre, you do it with lighting. You do it with you know, and obviously you use lighting in film as well, but lighting in a live scenario with theatre is so much more prevalent. Whereas in this, you know, how do you keep people engaged? But on the other hand, is it really, really easy? Is it far easier to adapt this than Streetcar Named Desire, for example, because you don't have to, it's literally the set's the same. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So I thought that was really interesting. So yeah, overall, three things: script and structures, the way it deals with things sort of as a subheading of that thematically, and the direction as well. So it's so, you know, it's so well written. Mm-hmm. Sets up the stakes at the start. The judge goes, go away, make a decision, got to be unanimous. And it's almost like he gives you the rules. Got to be unanimous. If it's guilty, he will be put in the electric chair and will be executed. Mm-hmm. And it goes from there, really. And I think that really informs the stakes of it as well. Not that, obviously, whether he's guilty or not guilty is obviously really, really important. But that whole thing of, if you find this guy guilty, he's not just going away. You know, he's going to be put to death.
He's dead.
And that is, whether he's guilty or not is obviously really important, but that is different. And that's why, you know, many, many people, and it's a heavy subject, and, you know, who knows where you're listening to this, and, you know, you might be on a train, you might be at home or whatever, but, you know, whether you agree with the death penalty or not, I personally am pacifist, I don't agree with the death penalty.
And if
you do, you know, I'm very much for free speech or whatever, but, you know, I don't, and that really informed the way I viewed the film. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. So yeah, I thought, again, that then informed thematic, you know, how it dealt with its themes. So a lot of really interesting things to say in there, considering, like you say, it's a tight hour and a half, set in one room. It's got loads of interesting things to say about prejudice, perspective, morality, poverty, the death penalty, the penal system in America, you know, things like that. And it's just not too on the nose, but it just drip feeds you that exposition. And I thought that was really, really good. It was like, sort of like solving a jigsaw puzzle as you went along a little bit. And also there's an element of where they're, like you say, they're peeling back the layers of exposition, but also they're pointing out holes in the case. So how did this work if it was like this? And so I thought that was really interesting. So there's a mystery element in there as well. And yeah, it's all, you know, it's directed by Sidney Lumet, who I think it was his first film, and he went on to become quite a legend of cinema. But it's so well directed. I mean, considering it keeps you engaged throughout. But not only that, the tension builds and you get to see each character interacting. And as it goes along, one of the sort of subplots is that it's simply that it's a really hot day, right? Yeah. And we've all been sat in a room, an office, school, wherever we've been sat on a hot day. And it's excruciating. It's tiring. It's, you know, it takes so much more concentration. And as it goes along,
millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
They sort of start by complaining about it. And then as it goes along, you see them getting hotter and sweatier.
Yeah. Sweat
and,
patches. And more
fatigued and more irritable with each other and stuff like that. And I thought that was really interesting. I mean, I really enjoyed it. It's definitely one I'd watch again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much what I liked overall. I mean, magnificent. If I was going to pick a film we've done to say, if you want to be a screenwriter, this is how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is up there.
Mm-hmm.
This is up there for me. I mean, obviously, I know it's a very simple premise, but in terms of how you do exposition and stuff like that, this is how you do it for me. What did you like about it?
So, kind of everything you just said. It's almost. I think we're spending maybe a little bit too much time together. What is this? 200 plus episodes now. You can really feel it. But like almost exactly everything that you've said is completely mirrors how I felt about it as well. I suppose a few other things are, so it's the what I was thinking as I was watching it is that it was like a masterclass in story development.
Yeah.
And that isn't something that I'd thought about before. Like I remember saying about, I think it was Blair Witch Project, oh, this is a masterclass in tension building. That's what it does. That's what it's good at. And I know I've used those words for other films before. Oh, this is a masterclass in this. But for it to be story development, that's not something I'd ever really thought about before. But it's like you said, because you're peeling back these layers, you get a little bit more of information as it comes through. And you get that information as the characters come to realize certain things. Like that whole sequence where they're talking about one of the witnesses and the glasses, the marks that her glasses have left on her nose and stuff. And then the sort of uncovering what that means and the detail that they go into and the way that their imaginations go. And it's like, well, she clearly wears glasses, but she's not going to be wearing glasses when she's asleep. So when she's apparently woken up and saw the murder taking place, there's not been time for her to put on her glasses.
So
and all
how did
this.
She see?
Yeah, exactly. And you've got our main guy who's so, like, at no point does he say, oh, the guy's definitely innocent. He just doesn't know if he's definitely guilty.
It's
and obviously
not
for him,
beyond reasonable doubt. That's the
exactly.
point, isn't it? And it doesn't spoon feed you and say he is or he isn't. It's
no. You
can't put this 18-year-old kid to death or, you know, take away the penalty. You can't find this young man guilty of this crime if it is absolutely not 100% cast iron true. If you're not sure. And that's, you know, that's what it, and I think that's what a lot of people don't understand about the way that a lot of justice systems work.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, I think people can be quite black and white and stuff about stuff when in fact it is grey. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's difficult. But anyway, sorry, as we were saying, it's a masterclass in that.
But just sort of going off from that as well, from what you were saying, when he first says, it's like, not guilty at the very beginning, I sort of thought, is it going to be about, oh, it's not that he didn't kill him, but the circumstances were quite specific. Like, it sounds like he was abused by his dad. So it's kind of like, well, as he killed him in self-defense, is it a case of he couldn't take it anymore, he couldn't take the abuse anymore? That doesn't necessarily mean that he's a danger to society. It was all kind of very circumstantial. So you sort of think that it's going to be a bit more about that. It's like, oh, you know, having sympathy for this child, essentially, who has had a really difficult time and a really difficult upbringing. But then suddenly it's like, well, actually, let's look at this piece of evidence. If this guy apparently walked from his bed to his front door within 15 seconds and it's 40 feet away, but he's got a bad leg. So the guy's like, he's reenacting it. He's sort of doing the walk. And he's like, how long did that take me? And they're like, oh, 45 seconds or something like that. And it's like, aha, so he couldn't have been where he said he was. And it's like this picking apart of the evidence. And,
and the whole train conversation. I love that.
Yeah. Oh my God. And it's weird, isn't it? Because that bit goes on for so long. But with every moment, I was like, I reckon in the wrong hands, it could have been so boring.
Or preachy, like you say, boring, preachy, just sort of nothing. Whereas it's just so engaging all the way through. And it's just guys talking.
Just 12 guys talking, man. Just
12,
12
lads
guys
having
talking.
A chat.
Yeah. And just, and you know what as well? 12 really like ordinary, like, regular looking dudes.
Yeah.
Like there's
there's no
James Dean. There's no Humphrey Bogart. Yeah. Like it's not trying to sort of, it's, you know, oh, here's this glossy Hollywood, you know, look at the beautiful people, look at the beautiful things.
It's not Ocean's 11, is it? Where it's like Brad Pitt, George Clooney, Matt Damon.
Exactly.
It's like just
here's
guys.
Here's the cigars and here's the money and here's this and all that. Like, it's none of those things, but it held my attention from start to finish and just made me ask so many questions about myself, about things like, you know, things like justice and things like your own reaction to things. It's like, well, what would I do if I was on jury duty? Like, I don't know. And now this has just raised so many questions and all this sort of thing. It was good, man. I thought it was really good. We'll move on now then to talking about anything we didn't like about the film or perhaps anything that we would change. So it's hard, I find, with these classic films because I don't know about you, Josh, but I do give them a lot of leash.
Yeah,
because you've got to sort of wipe away the past 50 or 60 years and think about when this came out, what it achieved at this time and that sort of thing. It's like, oh, but it's not Avengers Endgame, is it? It's like,
it's definitely not Avengers Endgame.
It's not that. But go on. Was there anything you were able to...
I mean, it's so difficult, isn't it? Not enough Angry Men, I think. They could have had more in there.
25
Angry Men. No, yeah. The one thing I would say, and I am stretching here because we always try and give up as balanced a view as we can, is that it took me a little while to differentiate between some of the characters. Because they're
I got exactly that in my notes.
They're basically, you know, all white men. They are different ages, but even some of the ones who are similar ages look similar.
Yeah.
So it's probably about halfway through, maybe even two thirds before I was like, right, he's the... And then you differentiate them between, like, that's the racist one. That's the one who wants to go to the baseball. That's the one
of them's
who,
got a hat on.
Yeah. That's the really old one. That's the slightly older one. That's the, that's the, you know, whatever. So, you know, I think there's that. And obviously the fact that it's in black and white doesn't help either because you can't even be like, that's the guy with the red tie. That's the guy with the blue jacket or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's it though. That's, I mean, it's so, you know, it's short, it's sharp, it's tight. It's great. That's all I've got. What about you?
Yeah, so exactly the same. I struggled to keep up with who was who. And you'd get sort of to a point in the film, like maybe 30, 35 minutes in, and I'd feel like a new person would come to speak. And I was like, oh God, has he been there the whole time sort of thing? And then, I did find those moments where I was like, oh, I don't know who that is, a little bit distracting then, because then I'm trying to think, oh, did he vote guilty last time? Is this one who thinks they're innocent? And it's like, so you sort of, I suppose that lost my attention a little bit because then now all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh, which one was this guy again? So that sort of threw me out of the film a little bit, but definitely not a major offender. And I do wonder if in some regard that is the point, like, because it's meant to be anonymous, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
There's a really great moment in it, actually, where they do a secret vote, don't they? And an extra person says not guilty as well as the original one. And immediately, I think the angriest guy goes, all right, who did it? Who voted this? Yeah. And it's like, mate, this was an anonymous vote. What
I want to know who's keeping
about?
Me here. Well, you don't get to know who's keeping you here.
Something else I thought was interesting about that as well, now you bring it up, like, a lot of the men who want to vote guilty keep saying like, oh, this is taking too long, we want to go and all this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, you change your vote then. You change your vote to not guilty and then we can all go home. It's like, you can't have it both ways. You can't say to people, oh, we're just, you're wasting time by saying not guilty. You should vote guilty like us so we can leave. And it's like, but if all you want to do is leave, just all of you vote not guilty and then you can leave, right? The other thing was just at times the audio quality was a little bit ropey. I felt like I couldn't always very clearly make out what they were saying, especially when it started raining. So obviously we get the two different kind of weathers going on where, like you say, it's really hot at the beginning. Everyone's really uncomfortable. Oh, the air conditioning doesn't work. The fans doesn't work. Oh God, this is so uncomfortable. And then maybe just over halfway through, around halfway through or so, it starts like torrential raining and you hear it, like you really, really hear it. So when that's going on, that is quite disruptive to the dialogue. So at times I was a bit like, oh gosh, did I hear that right?
I watched it with subtitles on.
Did you?
Yeah. I quite often do because I don't want to miss what they're saying. So yeah, particularly with older films, because of that, because obviously the equipment wasn't as good.
I'd
agree with that, yeah.
Yeah. That was it, though, to be honest. On the whole, really impressed. Well, we'll move on now then to, we will talk about the critical reception, although the main reason, obviously, you pick this and the reason that we do these classic films is to determine why they're a classic and if they're deserving of that status. But we will look at the critical reception first because it's always just so interesting. Now, you've said a couple of times there that it appears on lists of like greatest film ever made, really high up, that sort of thing. So I'm guessing it did pretty well. And if you think about some of the other classics we've done, I mean, I'm guessing that this is getting into the nines, into the 90s sort of stuff. And I reckon, I'm going to go big. I'm going to say I reckon it got like a 97 or a 9.7.
97,
yeah,
wow.
I reckon so.
And would that be fair?
Oh, it's hard, isn't it?
Considering what little we had in the dislikes.
Yeah, well, that is a terrific point, isn't it? I think, I wonder if 97, I don't know, man. Like, is it almost a perfect film? Maybe it is.
And it's, you know, its legacy as well in terms of the way it's made.
Influence.
Well, should we see?
Let's have a look. Go on.
So time of recording over on IMDb, it gets 9 out of 10. And I mentioned earlier that it was in the top 250, and I've just had a quick look. It's 5th. So according to IMDb, this is the 5th best film in the top
250. Ever?
And I don't really know how the top 250 on IMDb works, because obviously there was loads and loads of things on IMDb that will just have 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
So there must obviously be an algorithm that keeps... So if you look, like Dune Part 2, obviously it's only recently come out, is in there. It's like in the top 50 or something like that. It's really, really high up. And that will probably, you know, I haven't seen it, so this isn't a comment on the quality of the film, but knowing what I know about IMDb, it will probably drop down.
Mm-hmm.
It probably won't go out the top 250, but like I remember seeing with The Dark Knight went to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then it slowly dropped down. So anyway, so it's 5th and it's got 9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, the audience give it 97%.
Hey, I was bang on. Look at me.
Critics. Do you think the critics are harsher or kinder than 97%?
I think the critics are fucking jizzing all over this shit, man. I think they are tugging it to this
12
sort of
horny
thing.
Men. Reviewing 12 it.
Horny men, definitely.
Yeah, you are right. The critics gave it 100%.
No, fucking hell.
Yeah, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that averages out at 95%. I mean, I think that's fair enough. I think it's fair enough. I think it's a stone cold classic based on how good it is.
Yeah.
But also, in terms of how do you decide something's a classic? Well, I think its legacy in terms of particularly narrative structure and script writing is just clear to see.
Yeah, I think there is definitely something there just about you know what? I was just really surprised at how sophisticated it was written and how it explored and tackled some of the themes in there, especially for the time. And I think I am definitely guilty of this, is where you simplify the past a little bit and you just think, oh, a film from black and white film from 1957. Oh, it's just going to be a silly little thing, isn't it? And then you see it and it's like, oh God, there's actually some real solid ideas in here.
And there's also definitely a thing, I think, of almost maybe not wanting to like what the people before you liked.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, loads of people laugh at like dad films like The Great Escape or The Italian Job or Bridge of the River Kwai or, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But they're there for a reason. They're not just like, not people aren't going, let's make a film that just dads will like. Well, there we are then. 12 Angry Men is another classic film done and still very much deserving of its classic status. I don't think we are yet to say a film is not deserving of its classic status, but that's probably because of the very nature of the argument. Or can you think of one?
I think we were a little bit on the fence with Vertigo, you know.
Oh, yeah, neither of us were that bothered on Vertigo, were we? And then we were expelled from all film discussion circles because of that. so it's your turn to pick next week, Alice. What are we talking about?
Oh, I got one for you, Josh. Okay. I got a doozy for you. Okay. You're going to love it. And it's about time. It's been on my list for a long time.
Right, okay.
Listeners,
okay.
Josh, we're going to be watching Tremors 2.
Tremors 2?
Tremors 2.
Okay, Tremors 2. So join us next week when we will be talking about Tremors 2.
That's a hell of a drop, that, isn't it? From 12 Angry Men to Tremors 2.
Can we get to Tremors 12? 12 Angry Tremors. Let's see. We'll see. Let's see how we go. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with us, it's filmsandthatpod@gmail.com. We're on all the social medias. If you just search for Just Films and That on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, you'll find us. We're on YouTube as well. If you're looking for stuff, we put out clips and stuff like that where we can. We're on Patreon as well. So if you fancy supporting us, getting some extra bonus extended episodes, ad-free, day early, stuff like that, click the link in the episode description, and any support you can give us will be massively appreciated. All that remains to be said is thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week. It's goodbye from me. Cheerio.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.